Hey there, Mike Stelzner coming to you with a fascinating update you might not be familiar with. Did you know that Social Media Examiner can deliver all the marketing training, news, and trends, insights that you need into your inbox 3 days a week when you sign up for our newsletter, and it's completely free? Simply visit socialmediaexaminer.com/getupdates and take your marketing to the next level.
Welcome to the Social Media Marketing Podcast, helping you navigate the social media jungle. And now, here's your host, Michael Stelzner.
Hello, hello, hello. Thank you so much for joining me for the Social Media Marketing Podcast, brought to you by socialmediaexaminer.com. I'm your host, Michael Stelzner, and this is the podcast for marketers and business owners who want to know, hey, what works with social media? I'm really excited about today's show. I'm going to be joined by Laura Fitton, and we're going to be exploring Twitter for business. But first, before we get into that interview, I've got a really cool new discovery that I'd like to share with you right now.
After introducing a vegetarian diet to piranhas, look what Michael Stelzner discovered.
Do you use Firefox, the web browser? I do, and I just find it to be the most, consistent browser over Chrome. And there's some really cool capabilities that a lot of people do not realize. For example, if you hold down Command Option M on a Mac, and it's Control Shift M on Windows, Command Option M, you will be able to see what your website looks like in mobile. And it's really, really cool. Command Option M. I'm doing it right now. And it allows you to drop down different sizes, and it will show you essentially how it looks in a responsive kind of environment. Now, for the real geeks that are out there, and I know that some of you are like me, another cool capability is something called Command Option Q or Control Shift Q on Windows. And by the way, don't worry if you can't remember any of this. It'll all be in the show notes. What this does is this actually allows you to pull up any website, ideally your homepage or your blog or whatever, and it shows you literally everything and how long it takes to load. And this is really good if your website is acting up. Basically, you just can use this capability and it will show you kind of in a waterfall kind of an environment all the things that are loading and what is taking the longest to load. And it can allow you to kind of troubleshoot and find out problems. So for those of you that are a little bit techie, geeky, I hope you found that useful. For the rest of you, let's move on to today's interview.
Did you know that we can deliver awesome marketing info directly into your inbox? Simply subscribe to our weekly newsletter that comes out 3 days a week. You won't miss any of the updates going on in the world of social marketing. Visit socialmediaexaminer.com/getupdates.
With that, let's transition over to today's expert interview.
Helping you simplify your social safari, here's this week's expert guide.
I'm very excited to be joined today by Laura Fitton. If you don't know who Laura is, she's the co-author of Twitter for Dummies, third edition. She also founded 140, which was a Twitter app store, which was acquired by HubSpot. And she now is the inbound marketing evangelist at HubSpot. And she was also one of the very first Twitter consultants out there. Laura, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mike. It's great to be here.
So guess what Laura and I are going to talk about today? Twitter marketing. So Laura, let's start with a little bit of your backstory. First, what was your very first experience with Twitter and how long ago was it?
So in April of 2007, when everybody else was running around South by Southwest going, oh my God, Twitter, it's this great thing. I had really just gotten into reading blogs. And so I was like, why are all these bloggers I'm reading talking about this thing, Twitter? I went and I looked. I blogged on my own site how stupid I thought Twitter was.
I didn't get it. And then I moved on. I didn't get it at all. I was like, what the heck is this thing?
Like, what? And then in May, I kind of gave it one more shot. And within 24 hours of giving it one more shot, had connected to a bunch of fascinating people. Saw that one of my favorite bloggers was using it in a really, really smart way to surround himself with successful and interesting people.
Who was that back then? Do you remember?
Oh, I knew you were going to say that. And I can't remember. His name just slipped my mind. He was like 19 years old at the time and blogging about startups in the Valley.
Oh, that's cool.
Ben something.
What was he doing that intrigued you? Do you remember?
Well, so he wrote this blog post and he linked to his Twitter account. I clicked through and his last few tweets were things like meeting with a VC to get career advice, going to this tech event, just read this book and here's what I liked about it. And I thought, oh my God, this is like having the person in the next cubicle who's really, really on it with their career and kind of keeps you thinking about all the stuff you could be doing to develop yourself. Mm. So I just followed a bunch of the people he was following. And suddenly I had all this like, surround myself with successful, interesting people. I was a homebound mom of two kids under two at the time. And so suddenly being connected to other people's brains and thoughts and ideas and interests was just awesome.
So this was literally a few months after they launched. Is that what I hear you saying?
It was about a year on. They launched in 06, but they went really big in April 2007. My company at the time was called Pistachio Consulting, which is why I am known as Pistachio. I'm Pistachio on the Twitters. If you Google the word pistachio, you can't not find me.
I've got to ask, what's the deal with pistachios?
Pistachio Consulting had been a business name for a really long time at the point where I signed up for Twitter. And the first instance of it was the color of the paint in my home office was like that horrible pistachio ice cream green. Particularly the one we have here in Massachusetts at Friendly's Ice Cream. I'd had a company called Pistachio Consulting for years. And in signing up for this mysterious, weird new service, I was really hesitant to give away my gender or my name or anything. So I was like, well, I'll just use my company name. And of course, since then, everybody's like, oh, it's such cute branding. Every time I eat pistachios, I think of you. You know, people send me pistachio oil and pistachio jewelry And honestly, when I go to your conference and other places, people don't say, hey, Laura. They say, hey, Pistachio.
That is crazy.
It's so fun. Yeah.
Okay. So you come back from South by Southwest and it's summertime and you're this mom.
So I hadn't even gone. I was just reading bloggers and they were all talking about it. And I'm like, what is the stink with this Twitter thing? And so April, I thought it was stupid. End of May, I kind of got the hang of it. Few days later, went to my very first ever tweet up, which may have been the first ever tweet up. And it was crazy. It was like Scott Mahoney, who ran social media for Ford for years after that. Of course, he hadn't, done that yet. A guy named Brian Person down in Austin now, he was in Boston at the time, had organized it to welcome Paul Young to the country. He was this Aussie podcaster on the topic of PR, and he had just gotten a job in New York City. He now does a ton of marketing and PR for Charity Water. So, these people who've just turned into absolute giants of social media were all at this little drink up. And I was mainly focused on like, oh my God, I'm going to get out of the house and drink beer with other adults. This is amazing. So a few days after that, the very beginning of June, I put my Twitter handle right on my business card. I'm like, this is amazing. This is the greatest thing I've ever seen. This is going to be big. It's going to be a Twitter, a business thing. And people thought I was crazy.
Obviously you weren't. Well, let's fast forward to how in the world the book came about.
So I reached out to Wiley in 2008 because I wanted to write a book a bit more like a Heath Brothers kind of book, actually, breaking down the six most important underlying principles of why Twitter was taking off. And I never really finished that proposal because as I got on the phone, luckily, crazy things started happening once I got into Twitter. One of those many crazy things was ending up with several friends at Wiley just because I met them on Twitter. And so I had reached out to Ellen Gerstein to say, hey, who can I talk to about my book? And they said, by the way, we want to write Twitter for Dummies. We need somebody for that. I'm like, oh God, yeah, I've been blogging about Twitter for a couple of years now. I could totally do that. And that's how that came about. And then the crazy thing was the first edition came out at the exact same time that I was launching 140, which was the startup. And I was so manic, back-to-back crazy doing those things and not paying attention to things like who from the media is calling that I actually showed up for one interview. It was Andrew Warner's Mixergy.com. Mm. not knowing it was a video gig, with my hair styled roughly like a Fraggle from Fraggle Rock. I had two huge frizzy ponytails trying to keep my hair out of my face.
That is too funny.
I was just underwater at the time. I was very, very lucky. There was a lot of hype around both the startup and the book.
Well, when I started Social Media Examiner in October of 2009, I was at Blog World and you were one of the big wigs. I remember it was you and Jeremiah, you know, were kind of two of the Jeremiah Oying were two of the very high profile people that everybody was clamoring to talk to. So, you know, folks, we're talking to someone who was one of the very first evangelists for Twitter. And that's exciting.
I didn't realize that was your timing. You have done a ton in a shorter period of time than I knew. But yeah, that was the craziest week of my life.
Yep. So that was crazy.
I flew. Yeah. Yeah. I was doing all-nighters and flying all over the place and talking to people that I thought I would never, ever meet. And it was several people I met that week that led to 140 being preemptively VC funded. So it was just a crazy, awesome, super grateful for it week. I was in like four cities in 4 days.
Awesome. Well, let's focus in on, you know, you've obviously been monitoring and participating and writing about Twitter for a very, very long time. What let's talk about a couple of the biggest mistakes, because even today, there's a lot of people that don't understand Twitter. And frankly, I think if I just came into it out of the blue, I might not even understand it today. That's why books like yours are so necessary. So what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see businesses making when it comes to Twitter?
Well, and you know, it's funny. Sometimes I really empathize with James Taylor. He both has that huge hit, Fire and Rain. And then he has another song in which he kind of comes out and expresses how perplexed he is that people are paying good money to hear Fire and Rain again and again and again. And some of the stuff we've been trying to help people understand about Twitter since the very get-go is still some of the same kinds of stuff we get asked all the time. How do I get more followers? What do I tweet about? How do I, you know, just really, really, what is even the point of Twitter? How is there even value for my business? I still hear that one, which is kind of amazing. And it all really comes down to centering everything you do on Twitter around who you want to have read it. Really identifying who's the persona, who's the type of person that's a perfect customer for my business, and what do they actually need? And very few accounts actually do that. It's surprising.
Well, I know you talk about a Twitter mission statement. Is this related to that?
Yeah, yeah. And that's what I'm really excited to kind of develop in depth when I speak at Social Media Marketing World, is this very, very simple idea that when I bring it up at, you know, like at a lunch table full of 12 different Twitter for Business people, they all pick up their pens and write it down, right? And it's just take a step back from the account for a moment and really write a sharp, simple mission statement. And that mission statement needs to encompass who the account is for and what value it delivers, right? So yours might be Social Media Examiner is where
it's where marketers come to keep up to date on all the social media changes, probably.
Exactly, exactly. And you could even make it more specific by saying where marketers will find the latest news and information on social changes, right?
There you go.
And now you have a really baller litmus test whenever you're trying to decide what should I publish, right? You look at it and say, well, is it that value payoff that I've promised in my mission statement or isn't it? Another thing a mission statement gives you is portability, right? It lets others, whether they're your employees, partners, stakeholders, readers, it lets others articulate very simply what your account is all about and who should follow it and why they should follow it.
Hey, Laura, another question for you is, what are your thoughts about people overly promoting their own stuff on Twitter? I'd love to hear what you have to say about that.
That is such a great question. The obvious answer is, oh, it's bad. You totally shouldn't do it. You should promote other people. The more subtle question is, are you putting out the right stuff in the first place? Because if you're putting out stuff that really is valuable to that core persona audience that you identified in your mission statement, then it's a lot less egregious. It's a lot less bad to only share your own stuff.
Good point.
Because your own stuff is really genuinely valuable. It's really genuinely, at HubSpot, obviously, we call this inboundy, right? It's much more about the reader than it is about you. So you can actually get away with a fair amount of quote-unquote self-promotion if your whole modus operandi of promoting yourself is to offer really valuable stuff that helps people, and specifically helps the kind of people who'd make good customers for you in the first place, right? You're not trying to beat Justin Bieber or Ellen DeGeneres at Twitter. You're trying to be a magnet that attracts the exact right type of lead, type of potential customer.
And I'm going to add a little insight here. We have my own personal account, which is Mike_Stelzner. And then we've got SM Examiner, which is Social Media Examiner's Twitter account. And for the longest time on SM Examiner, probably up until about a year ago, all we did was tweet our articles, and everybody was fine with that. And right. The reason we did that, and we were only following like 5 or 6 people, which were the founding contributors to Social Media Examiner. And the reason is because that was a way that someone could just essentially get updates to our articles without having to, get the email every day. And it served a purpose. But it wasn't until recently that when we expanded our social team and we had staff and personnel that we actually started changing that a little bit. And at that juncture, what we started doing was not just sharing our own stuff, but sharing some also very valuable content from some of our peers in the industry. And we also engaged a lot more on that account, and we saw things literally explode. And, I think it really does come down to there's nothing wrong with either one. It kind of depends what you're trying to achieve, doesn't it?
Yeah. There is a lot to be said for making it about the community. You know who really nailed this one? Actually, Jeff Jarvis, way, way back in his book, What Would Google Do? He said, do what you do best and link to the rest, right? You can build a really valuable Twitter account that shares hardly any original content if it's extremely well curated.
Awesome. I know you've got some examples of some businesses that are doing Twitter well, so why don't you go ahead and share one of your first examples?
Sure. Well, a couple quick personal stories, one with Canada Goose Inc. and one with Verizon. In both cases, I had a fairly specific customer service need. With Verizon, there was a downed wire on my street, and all of the efforts to use their normal customer service channel weren't getting me anywhere. With Canada Goose Inc., I had an order for a really, really hard-to-find jacket that they sell called the Mystique, which saved my butt this morning in the -5 degrees we had here when we recorded this in Boston. And the order had canceled out. And I knew the jacket was hard to get, so I wasn't even that surprised it had canceled. In both cases, I just said on Twitter, hey, at company, I have some questions. Could you follow me back? Because I prefer to not be that loud screaming voice. You know, a lot of people will use social media to rant at a company.
Right.
I prefer to do it in private. I think it's a little classier. I think it's forgiving because you know these companies, a lot of the social media is staffed by very young people just starting out in their careers. You don't want to stress them out, you know, and they can help you a lot more if you're kind of quiet behind the scenes with it.
Hey,
and
Laura, real quick, yeah. Why don't you explain why you asked them to follow you back for those that might not be
familiar? Oh, yeah. So on Twitter, the only way to send private messages, it's nice. It's sort of an opt-in model. The only way to send someone a private message is if they've followed you back first.
Right.
So the most polite way to ask for some kind of customer support, which is a valid use of Twitter, but a lot of people go overboard with kind of being jerks about how they ask, is if you send an @reply, so that's just the @ sign and then the handle of the Twitter user, in my case, Pistachio, that will show up on their mentions tab. And any business that's doing a really good job monitoring Twitter, and both of these companies were, they both responded very quickly, will see that tweet. And we'll follow you. And then that allows you to privately message them and say, you know, hey, Verizon, there's a line down on my street. And after 45 minutes with customer support, I got nowhere. Could you see that someone checks that out, please? And they were amazing. They were on it. They got it into their system. I mean, the guy on the phone said he couldn't even log a trouble ticket unless I put it on my own personal account, which I didn't really feel like doing because it was down the street from me. It had nothing to do with my account.
Right. That's crazy.
In the case of Canada Goose, again, I have to say much props to them. They hooked me up, and that's why I even have this coat. I wasn't really asking them for a special favor, even though I ended up getting one. What I was really trying to figure out is, okay, I found this one coat left of a coat that sold out in 4 days 2 months ago. I placed an online order, and 3 weeks later, the order canceled itself. And so that made sense to me. It was like, they're obviously out of stock, right? There was some glitch in the system. So all I really wanted to know was, are more coats shipping sometime this year, or am I out of luck till next August, right? Because there'd obviously been a feeding frenzy. This coat is that good. And they were great. They said, we're going to find you a coat in some retail outlet somewhere, bring it back to the warehouse, and when we have it here, we'll have you call in and order it again, and we'll get you your coat. And they totally did not have to do that.
Wow. Let's bring this down. These two examples are great examples of somebody asking for support, in this case you, from a company, and you, being savvy, asked for them to follow you. But if we flip the coins and you're a business listening and someone's tweeting to you, you may ask them to follow you because maybe they're not, and that can allow that private message to happen.
And that is a good best practice, is to take it offline as quickly as possible, whether they're happy or mad.
Yeah. And a lot of times I've seen people say, hey, can I have your phone number in a DM? And they'll get on the phone with you. Or can I have your email address? And that way you can get a little more dialogue than 140 characters. But a lot of times people just want to be heard in a timely fashion. And I guess the moral of the story here is, if you're not actively monitoring your Twitter account at least a couple times a day, if you're a smaller brand, and if not a lot more and you're a bigger brand, then these problems could fester and get out of control very quickly, couldn't they?
Yeah, they really can. And, you know, it's a good idea to look out. Now, I also do realize that given that I wrote this book and that I've been lucky enough to have a fairly big audience on Twitter, companies are probably being a lot nicer to me than they might think to be to the average user. But I didn't get that feeling from either Verizon or Canada Goose in this case, that they were like, oh, let's show off in hopes of getting some return out of it. They just were doing the right thing, and the company has set it up so that the people staffing the account have access to the business and can do real things with it. And I think that's also very important. And one of the risks of farming out your social to an agency, right, is knowing that you have the back end support to actually give the customer the service they need. Certainly people have praised Comcast off and on over the years for their phenomenal Twitter support, but the company hasn't always backed up that support and been able to really follow through.
Awesome. Now, we're going to continue to talk about some other examples and relationship building techniques on Twitter. But before we do, this podcast is sponsored by Social Media Marketing World, taking place this March in San Diego. And Laura, I know you were there last year. Can you just share a little bit about your experience?
Well, I don't need my Canada Goose Mystique coat there because it's not -5 degrees like it is in Boston right now. San Diego looks so good to me right now. No, I'm really, really excited. I had a fantastic time. There's an opening party on a huge, huge ship, the Midway.
Yep.
And we got to go up on deck and talk to a guy who used to help crew the fighter jets as they were taking off. And we learned all kinds of crazy things about, you know, the physics of how here's something you never think about, right? There's a launcher arm on that boat that throws the airplanes up into the air. How do you stop the launcher arm, right? Once it's let go of the plane, that thing is moving really fast and has a lot of force behind it. Well, it goes into like a really amazing hydraulic thing and slows down gradually. We learned so much, and we met just such fantastic people. I know I'm sounding like an ad here, but I'm really, really excited about going back. And it's not just the cold today making me excited.
Well, you heard it. You can learn all about hydraulics at Social Media Marketing World and Twitter as well. So let's go back to, you have another example you wanted to share with us?
Yeah. Two other companies that do a really good job of picking up when they've been mentioned. Both are products I use and love. And so again, maybe they're paying more attention to me because I mention them all the time. But Mini USA is just really funny. I had never owned a Mini before, and I remarked that I was getting one. And they were immediately like, oh, is it a girl or a boy? And what are you naming it? Or what are you naming it? And I said,
what?
I have to name it.
Wow.
And they said, is it a girl or a boy? I'm like, what? You know, and so I named my car.
All right. Well, what's the name?
Pippin. And it's a girl. And Pippin's a boy's name in the play. So I don't even know how that all happened.
That sounds great. That's cool.
We have a girl car named Pippin. And it wasn't Twitter related, but the auto body shop that had to fix it up recently was so sweet in their emails. They kept referring to my car as Pippin because I had told them that was its name. The other one is it's a Stop and Shop brand, Peapod. On the Twitter, they're at Peapod Delivers. For those of you who don't live where there's grocery delivery, I apologize. It's a service I can't live without, especially being a single mom all these years. My kids are, they were 1 and 2 when we separated, right? And so going grocery shopping with a 1 and a 2-year-old is a complete non-starter. So I'm completely dependent on their service. I use it all the time. Well, our mutual friend, Lee Oden, got this amazing care package from Oscar Mayer right before Christmas this year that featured a kind of bacon that I've never seen anywhere before from Oscar Mayer, but like a deli cut or a butcher cut or something. And so I sent, you know, just a funny tweet retweeting the picture of him in his bacon scarf saying, at Peapod Delivers, why you no carry butcher's cut or whatever. And someone followed me back, followed up and said, I'm going to put in a request for you. You know, and I doubt they'll ever be able to get the specific product. It's not even about that. It was just about they saw their name. They honed in on what I was talking about. They looked into it. They totally didn't have to do that. I wasn't even asking them to. They just were kind of jokingly mentioned. Really quick thing, if people are listening and can grab a pen, I'm going to rattle off a few different companies that do a great job with that mission statement thing.
Yeah, and well, by the way, we'll have it in the show. We'll have it in the show notes if you don't have a pen. So just go ahead and rattle them off.
Okay, great. Hopefully these are still current because this is a screenshot I took a little while ago. But Goldman Sachs, Travelocity, Kate Spade New York, PlayStation Europe, account called Machinima. M-A-C-H-I-N-I-M-A, SitePoint, Refinery29, and Alternative Press. They all have bios that say, follow us for, and then they say exactly what you're going to get by following the account.
That is awesome.
Now, right? It's so simple. Follow us for. So once you've written down that first mission of X is where Y can find Z, then you rewrite your bio along the format of, you know, a quick nibbling about who you are and who should be interested in this. They follow us for, and then tell them what you're going to give them.
You know, it's funny. I'm actually looking at what ours says, and ours says, follow us as we help you navigate the constantly changing social media jungle.
Boom.
So, hey, it looks like we've got a team that's doing the right thing. Maybe they're reading your book.
Now, and that can answer so – sorry, I keep interrupting you. Yeah. That can answer so many other questions when you're the person running that account day to day, such as – well, when can I be non-serious and when do I have to be all business, right?
Right.
If you see a funny cat icon come across and everybody's sharing it and it in some way relates to that value that you try and give or the kind of person you're trying to serve, then it's great to go a little bit off message, right? But if it's completely random and just happens to be popular that day, you know, the secret, by the way, to building up your Twitter account, tweet about Justin Bieber, tweet about Ellen DeGeneres, tweet about whatever's trending on TMZ, your numbers will go right up, but they'll be junk.
Exactly.
And that's why the mission's so important.
Now, to what you were saying earlier with these examples, one little take-home point that I want to zoom in on for the listeners is that there's a lot of noise on Twitter and a lot of traffic on Twitter, and people really appreciate a reply. I can tell you from my own experience, just every once in a blue moon when someone retweets me, I will reply and say thank you, and it blows them away. So this is the smallest little thing can have the biggest impact when it comes to Twitter. Now, I want to transition this dialogue into relationship marketing because I think this is one of the most amazing, you know, I think this is the secret sauce of Twitter. So why don't you share a little bit about what your thoughts are on how you can use Twitter to develop relationships and maybe how you've done it.
And that's the perfect jumping off point from what you just said. I was about to jump in with, oh, yeah. And simple things, right? When you are sharing something that another blogger or a reporter or whoever wrote, don't just tell people why it's great and share the link. Tell people why it's great, share the link, and include the Twitter handle of the person who wrote it in the first place.
There you go.
Right? Talk about PR, right? You're going to get right on that writer's radar as someone who is supporting their work, appreciates their work, has an audience for whom their work is probably relevant, right? That is the first drop in the bucket towards building that relationship. And it's as simple as, you know, appending their name, especially, this one blows my mind that people don't all already know this trick. If they're writing about you, right? When you share that, make sure to mention them.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Right? Who wouldn't do that, right? And especially if you have a good following that's going to retweet the article, that's going to engage with the article, make sure when you share it, their name is in there, and they'll see all the other people going ahead and also sharing it, and they'll think, well, geez, they're great to work with. Because, you know, journalists have a really tough job right now. Just the idea that they have to write content that gets traffic, that gets attention, that gets people to engage, anyone who is helping them on that mission is certainly going to earn a lot more trust and respect a lot faster. So that's just one, you know, kind of PR way to do it. But you can apply that to any, you know, employees you're trying to get to come work at your company, partners you're trying to work with, customers who would be good. Just give them a little bit of love.
Yeah, and we should say this is no different than calling someone by their first name. This is kind of like saying when you're in the checkout line and you see the gal's name is Sally, you say, thank you, Sally. When someone hears their name, they're like, what? Oh, how'd you know my name was Sally? Oh, you're welcome, sir. I mean, when it comes to Twitter, and as long as you're not using some sort of automated schedule program that people oftentimes can program out of their Twitter feed, and it's actually authentic, you know what I mean? Like, hey, at Pistachio, you know, loved your appearance on at Mike_Stelzner's show. And some people are going to do that now.
Right.
You know,
right.
I guarantee you, you're going to probably reply to every one of those because that is personal and you can tell.
Yeah. Yeah. And we put a couple of Easter eggs in the book along those lines that say like, oh, hey, you know, you can say hi to us or you can say hi to a celebrity or...
What else do you do? What else have you done to kind of develop relationships? I mean, because you can kind of reach out cold to people, right, that you're trying to somehow develop a relationship with on Twitter as a first course of action. I know I've done this to try to get people to show up on this show.
Totally, totally. And even before you actually reach out to them on Twitter, the very first thing is follow them on Twitter, right? Because they may or may not, depending on how busy they are, they may or may not see that follow notification and check you out then. More realistically, if it's someone like Ellen, right, she's not going to see that you just followed her that day.
Right.
But by following her, you then play a bit of a wait and see game. And maybe someday she'll have a need, she'll have a question, she'll say something relevant, she'll do something where you can add some value. I had this engagement with a Wall Street Journal reporter, Julia Angwin, where I have this Twitter app store startup, 140. I want nothing more in the world than for tech journalists to see me as an expert on Twitter apps. I'm following this woman among many other journalists. And one night, I'm literally in my kid's crib trying to get her to fall asleep. And I noticed Julia tweet, oh, I'm installing Uber Twitter. Now, at the time, this was this crazy app that the moment you installed it, it changed Twitter's location field to give out your latitude and longitude.
Oh, is that what did that?
Right?
I remember
and
that.
So I'm going out on a limb here, but like if I'm a journalist in New York City for the Wall Street Journal, I probably don't want to be broadcasting that at all times.
Right.
And so without even taking my left arm out from under my kid's head, because she's just not a good sleeper and she'd finally drifted off, with my right thumb, I message her back and I say, hey, at Julia, check it. That wasn't her Twitter handle, but, you know, hey, Julia, and her at handle. Check the location defaults on that app. You might not be comfortable with them, right? I didn't say, hey, I'm a Twitter expert, and I just said, like, ooh, you need this. And I gave it to her, and then I left her alone, right? And so when I did circle back later, I was shocked to find out that that actually was a pivot point in her career where she got way, way more into writing about privacy and security online after that little incident.
That's very cool.
Isn't that crazy? So you never know. So the first step is to follow them. And then, yeah, when it's appropriate, reach out. But the best first outreach is about them, right? It's not you going, hey, come be on my podcast. Come speak at our conference. Come check out the hydraulics on the Midway. It should really be, you know, a lot of people ask questions on Twitter. Be one of the people who answers that person's questions on the regular. A lot of people share stuff they love, respond and say you love it too when you do. Don't be a brown noser, be authentic. But
my last question is, how do you use Twitter other than just replying to people? I'm talking about Laura. Or do you just use it to reply to people? Because, you know, I mean, I'll be honest. My personal Twitter account, I use it to tweet out the day's articles on Social Media Examiner. I use it to give some love to some of our writers. Like some of our writers, I go to their blog and I find articles that they've written and I share that out. And then for the most part, I'm replying to people all day long. And that's how Mike Stelzner uses Twitter. I'm curious, how does Laura Fitton use Twitter?
It's funny because over the years, it's gone through so many phases. The 50 tweets a day phase, the goofy oversharing phase, the, oh my God, I'm so excited about everything I've ever seen phase. A lot of mothering, you know, like pictures of my kids or crazy stuff we are off doing. Lately, it's actually a bit more toned down. It does tend to be following up with people who've talked to me first. I have a list of people that I follow. Like people ask, like, you're following 100,000 people back. How do you read Twitter? I never use, and no business should, never use that who I follow as actually who I follow. Set up lists of the people you actually want to read and see. And so I have some lists of people I think are really inspiring, and I take a look at what they're sharing, what they're reading. It's really a great way to pick up a lot of information fast on like a study break, right? Maybe work for 45 minutes, take a walk for 5 minutes, and then spend 10 minutes catching up on Twitter and then dive back into your next hour.
But you do put quotes and stuff out there, it looks like, every once in a while, right?
I do. Sometimes it's just random. I'm moved by something. Sometimes I'm sharing something from HubSpot. The tweet I have pinned to the top of my account, which is another cool feature that Twitter, you know, got relatively recently, lets you put one tweet that is always the first one on your profile page, is a Elizabeth Gilbert quote that really resonated with me about taking care of yourself.
You know, my last question has to do, you have a lot of photos on your Twitter account, like 1,700 photos.
Oh, wow.
And I think that a lot of people think of Facebook as a place where they tend to put photos. Like I do, you know, because it's more private and more personal. I'm guessing a lot of people that have Twitter accounts do not attach photos or images to their tweets. I'm curious what your thoughts are on whether it's a good idea to do that or not do that. And in particular, you know, using your smartphone, taking a picture and then doing a tweet with the image. What are your thoughts on that?
People should absolutely use more images on Twitter. They work very, very well. When our newest social media manager came in here at HubSpot, she really, I mean, if you look at HubSpot's account right now, I'm flipping through it, almost every single tweet has an image of some sort. And the reason for that is when you look behind the scenes at your metrics, just right on twitter.com, they offer some free metrics tools, or if you're using a paid social media tool, tweets with images in them get way, way, way more engagement. So it's definitely well worth it. It's a great place for images. People like to flip through pictures while they're mobile.
Awesome. And I mean, it's a definite way to stand out in the newsfeed, right? Because, or whatever they call it, the Twitter feed. I mean, I'm getting my Facebook and whatever mixed up. But it is a great way to stand out in the feed when you have a bunch of tweets that are just text and there's a couple with images on it. That can make a huge difference.
Totally, totally. Here's a tweet that they sent January 7th, and it's a picture of a HubSpot employee holding up burgers that one of our customers had sent us. And the tweet is, further confirmation that we have the best customers on earth. Thanks for the burgers, Schweid and Son. Hat tip, A. Krodinger. And that was the employee who's holding up the photo.
Very cool.
And it really jumps out. It's, you know, it's like, we're about our employees, we're about our customers. It has nothing to do with marketing software, right? It's just us saying like, hey, we love our customers and thank you for that gift and we're glad you love us back.
Awesome. Well, Laura, where can people discover more about your new book, Twitter for Dummies, and you in particular?
Probably just HubSpot.com/pistachio. Or honestly, if you have a tough time remembering links, just Google the word pistachio and you're going to find me somewhere.
Awesome. And they can just find Twitter for Dummies pretty much anywhere they can get books, right?
Totally, totally. Yeah, we're very nice thing about being part of the Dummies series is they do an excellent, excellent job on distribution.
Laura Fitton, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Michael. It's been great. I'm really looking forward to San Diego. Really.
Well, I hope you found value in that interview. If there was anything that we mentioned and you missed it, And I know there was a lot that we mentioned. We take the notes for you. Visit socialmediaexaminer.com/132. That stands for episode 132. Also, never miss a future episode of this podcast by making sure you subscribe, hitting that subscribe button. It's totally free. Also, if you're a regular listener to the show, can you go to socialmediaexaminer.com/love? That'll put a little tweet into your Twitter feed that says you recommend the show. And yes, you can do it right now on your mobile phone. This brings us to the end of yet another episode of the Social Media Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Stelzner. I'll be back with you in the driver's seat next week. I hope you make the absolute best out of your day, and may social media continue to change your world.
The Social Media Marketing Podcast is a production of Social Media Examiner.
Want more good stuff? Sign up for our top-notch social marketing newsletter. We deliver it straight into your inbox 3 days a week. Visit socialmediaexaminer.com/getupdates.